I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH Boston.
Sir, I'm giving you 175 years, which is 2,100 months. I've just signed your death warrant.
That was Judge Rosemary Aquilina in a Michigan courtroom yesterday. She was sentencing Larry Nassar, the former doctor for the U.S. women's gymnastics team. More than 150 young women had recently come forward to detail Nassar's serial sexual abuse. Many of them, including prominent Olympic athletes, appeared in court to recount what Nassar put them through. Jasmine Garz is the World's Women's Lives correspondent and joins me now. So, Jasmine, you're about to speak with Dominique Mocianu. Remind us who Mocianu is and why you wanted to speak specifically with her.
Dominique Mocianu is a star in the world of gymnastics. At age 14, she became the youngest person to win a U.S. gymnastics gold medal. She was hailed as this hero in the 90s. She was the girl every little girl looked up to, including me. I was a gymnast from age 5 to 16, and Dominique Mocianu was my hero. She was my goal. And then, you know, several years later, she came out and was really vocal about the verbal and physical and emotional abuse she suffered at the hands of her coaches, Marta and Bella Caroli. And her father as well was extremely abusive to further her career as a gymnast. And she emancipated from her father eventually. So I really wanted to catch up with her as kind of like a pioneer of calling abuse out and ask her what is going through your mind right now.
I am so proud of the courageous women who've come forward, because it took that many women to come forward to finally show, unfortunately, the horrific acts that have taken place and that have gone unregistered and unnoticed for so long. When I first started speaking out, the former president of USA Gymnastics, he tried to assassinate my character, make me a liar, belittle me, treat me like I was a worthless person. And I was so disgusted by his behavior and the facade that they all put on television and this, oh, this greater than life Carolis and the ranch and all of that. And I said, it's all a lie. That is not who they are. You're glamorizing people who abuse children. How is that okay? And how come nobody's saying anything? Because all they cared about was they were winning. So nobody was asking questions. And everyone kept saying, oh, well, their success is proved. It's proved because the medals. And it just became so normalized. That's the scary part. And then it allowed someone like a Nassar to breed in this toxic environment and have unprecedented access to children.
Has anyone reached out to you since to say, hey, I'm sorry I didn't take that more seriously?
Nobody has said those words, believe it or not, to me. And that's what was most disappointing in the last decade, is that not one teammate came publicly forward. Maybe some friends of mine and some of the gymnasts I train with. I felt at a very low point about a year and a half ago. And I started to pray about it. And I said, is it all worth it? Nobody is listening. Nobody is wanting to make changes.
What was going on with these coaches? I mean, for listeners who don't know, what was
going on? Of screaming and belittling and body shaming and making you feel worthless and neglecting you. If you made a mistake, oh my goodness, it was because you were fat and you were a worthless piece of garbage. That's how they treated you. They chose to ignore you the rest of the time, so they can prove they're more powerful than you. At the Olympics, before I received my gold medal, I was crying because I felt like a disappointment to Marta and Bella because of how they made me feel after my vault, when mathematically my vault actually won it for the team.
I remember seeing you and I admired what you did, but you also looked incredibly sullen for a 14-year-old. And after you won your Olympic gold medal, did you get to celebrate?
So there was a team celebration that was at Planet Hollywood. Bruce and Demi Moore threw like this surprise party and there was media there and stuff. I was just happy to eat. Honestly, we hadn't eaten since 2 o'clock in the afternoon, right before we went to, you know, the warm-up practice and then go compete. And so really, we didn't have food till 10:30 at night after the competition. And I just felt, I don't know, I worked all these years. And I said, is this what it's really supposed to feel like? I felt empty. And I felt saddened because I wasn't good enough. I wasn't perfect enough. And here I was, a 14-year-old. This was my dream for the last 11 years of my life. I spent 40-plus hours in the gym. I sacrificed so much. I had very few friends. And I did it for this. I felt like it should have felt better, more fulfilling.
Do you worry that now what it's going to be is, oh, we caught the monster, problem solved? I mean, do you worry that the bigger cultural picture that enabled Nasser is not going to get addressed?
I do believe that change will happen and is starting to happen. We've already seen 3 board members resign. USA Gymnastics cut ties with the Caroli Ranch as a national team training center. We've seen Debbie Van Horn, the trainer, was also fired. We've seen MSU president fired. I mean, there are finally actions being taken. And I told that to the president, who spoke to me almost a month ago. And I told her, I said, if you want any credibility within our industry, you absolutely have to start making some drastic changes. We have been waiting long enough. Our community is fed up. People have been sounding the alarms for a long time. And I've been very vocal for 10 years and felt very much at a low point about a year and a half ago, until all this stuff came forward, until the women told me about Nasser. And I thought, oh my gosh, I can't leave you alone in this. I have to help you.
I think something that gets left out of the conversation is money and the balance of power. USA Gymnastics pulls in so much money. And unlike any other professional athletes, gymnasts make little to no money. And I don't think a lot of people realize that, because they see you on the cereal box or, you know, the commercial, and they think, oh, gymnasts make a ton of money. They're famous. There's a huge power imbalance between the athletes and the organization. Do you think the money issue needs to be addressed here?
Oh, absolutely. And I've said that with people who are throwing around the idea of starting a competing organization, because that has been talked about for years. And I said, okay, well, if you're going to do that, remember, our athletes don't have any pension when they leave this sport. They go out into the world broke after they've given 20, 25 years of their life to the sport. They need to have better stipends, and they need to have a bill of rights, some kind of a protection for them, and to know what their rights are. Do you know nobody ever read us any kind of rights? That's why we felt we didn't have any.
Dominique, I want to end our conversation on a positive note, because I love this sport, and I know you love it too.
Definitely.
Something really beautiful that you always talk about is learning to fall back in love with the sport after the Olympics. And I think that's something that fans of the sport are going to have to do after all this. They're going to have to fall back in love with it and find reasons to fall back in love with it. Was there a precise instant that you can describe after you left the Carolis, you left the Olympics? Was there an aha moment where you realized, I love gymnastics?
You know, I always love gymnastics because of how it makes you feel, and running and jumping and flying through the air and twisting and flipping and all of that. It was the adults that created it to be twisted and warped. The aha moment was when I was obviously a child and loved the sport for its purity and my innocence, and I could excel and be very good at it and possibly go to the Olympics. I loved it as a child. I love it to this day. My children enjoy it. My son actually really has potential to go far. And that's why there's so many things that are going to change to better the future for not only my children, but everyone's children. And that's what I fought so hard for all the last, you know, 10 years. And so there is one aha moment post all of this that I've come forward. And honestly, in the courtroom, just a couple days ago, where I sat and supported the brave women that have come forward, I felt more love and support than I ever have at any USA Gymnastics event in the last 10 years.
Dominique, I want to thank you so much as a woman and as a former gymnast for talking about what happened. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Jasmine, I got to say, that was a totally riveting conversation. Let me just start by asking you, as our Women's Lives correspondent and a former gymnast who's seen this whole world up close, what struck you about what Dominique was saying?
Well, I think what struck me is the very accurate perception of a world in which adults are in it for a lot of reasons, and some of them, you know, it's almost like the child actor conundrum. I mean, there's just a lot of adults around you who are in it for the money, who are in it to live vicariously, who are in it for the glory, in the case of Dr. Nasser, for some very dark and twisted reasons, and that there needs to be some system in which someone, a third party, jumps in and says, is this kid okay?
So let me follow up on the big question that these abuse scandals keep on opening up. And that question is, how could this happen? Mochiano pointed out that the U.S. team had this tradition of winning, and winning essentially eclipsed the abuse. If the U.S. had been losing, do you really think Nasser would have been facing a judge sooner?
Honestly, I think, yeah, there's a culture of follow the money. You know, like these wins bring in tremendous endorsements and prestige. And I think, you know, for a predator like Nasser, they thrive off hiding behind the cloak of prestige, of befriending parents, of being valued members of the community. And what's behind it is very dark.
Mochiano also expressed some resentment that her own teammates didn't speak out. How much is that internal silence still a problem?
I think in my experience, both as a journalist and as a former gymnast, when you have an environment that is abusive, one of the strategies of abusers is to turn their victims against themselves and isolated in their shame, isolated by psychological manipulation. You know, when I was a kid doing gymnastics, I was a gymnast from age 5 to 16. There was very much a competitiveness that went beyond what was healthy.
There was this moment in your interview with Mochiano where I just thought, you know, we put so much on young Olympic athletes, and there are parents who bring that pressure even earlier in their kids' lives. You know, when there's gold and those kids end up on the box of Wheaties, we see the glory. But to hear Dominique's story of emptiness, to hear the other stories of those women in the courtroom in Michigan, I mean, bottom line, it doesn't sound like fun. It doesn't sound like the life of champions. Frankly, it sounds like torture. Can you explain why any parent knowing this would want to introduce their kids to this potentially traumatizing sport?
Well, I think I want to be really careful not to blame parents for what happened, because parents are as much the victims of Dr. Nasser as the children. And I think for a lot of kids, this is a really fun sport. I mean, listen, very few people are going to go to the Olympics. Very few people will go past, you know, having some fun with it in high school and in middle school. You know, I think there is a lot of dreams, there's a lot of glory, there's a lot of prestige, and you fall in love with the sport. It's so graceful, and it's so beautiful, and elegant, and difficult, and challenging.
I was also intrigued that Mochiano thought pretty firmly that the Nasser sentence and case will change things. I know you spoke with a law professor. What's his take?
Yeah, I went to Baruch College here in New York, where Professor Mark Edelman teaches. He specializes in law, in sports law. And he told me gymnasts need to unionize. And you know, what he was saying is, if you take the major sports in America, football, baseball, basketball, hockey, they are all on a professional level unionized. And he was saying gymnasts and ice skaters are at the biggest disadvantage because they start so young. We're talking about 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds with no bargaining power. And what Professor Edelman said is, if we do not address the structural problems, perhaps unionize, this is going to happen again.
A reasonable union might try to impose some type of review of people that are providing services to the athletes. They might create internally a form of whistleblower protection to allow athletes to bring complaints directly to them. The union would have the duty to investigate these complaints, as well as perhaps provide the athlete with the legal costs to seek attorneys, to seek psychological help, and to make sure these individuals are removed.
Jasmine, do you think that could work?
I think it's better than nothing. I mean, right now, I think gymnasts are at an egregious disadvantage in the world of sports.
Jasmine Garz, our Crosswinds Lives correspondent. That was really powerful stuff, Jasmine. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Marco.